The work that FLCCC has been doing has been absolutely amazing. Their quality of data, their quality of education, their love for people.
It is so important to come to a conference like this because it just really restores your faith. It gives you the courage to keep going, to speak up.
I think conferences like this build community. The reality that people hear, they don't all agree on everything, but they're open-minded. They're open to being convinced with evidence. An amazing forum for learning new things.
It is so much greatness in one room. It is so much positivity.
The favorite part of being here, it's the energy. It's the connections with different people.
The talks have been really great, but the networking has been really the biggest part of it.
Dialogue and networking. They literally program and build time into the conference to be able to do that because they understand the value of community.
I think of the FLCCC as an incredibly important organization in creating the parallel structure of a health system for America. I mean, I that may sound a bit overblown, but I actually think that's true.
I think FLCCC is really pushing for honest medicine. I mean, I think they're saying, look, here's our experience as clinicians and scientists. Here's what the data shows. How can we be of help to you? As opposed to, we've got to see so many patients so that money can be made and you have to stay sick.
To me, I think once we can open the conversation to just being like, maybe there's something going on. Look, here is so much data and so much information presented in just one weekend. It feels so good to feel like I understand what's going on and I'm educated now.
It really is the best of the best. And now kind of in this context of the new medical system, because we have to create a new medical system. Our medical system is broken.
I'm very, very impressed with the inordinate value that both Dr. Corey and Dr. Merrick place on removal of conflict of interest.
The entire healthcare system across the country would fall apart if we actually achieve the objective that we say that we want to achieve, which is wellness. And so with FLCCC, they're actually doing that. And so it's a completely different paradigm and model. It's an answer to prayer, and it's the right time.
I couldn't agree more. Welcome to the FLCCC Weekly Update. I'm Betsy Ashton. I'm the creative director of this wonderful alliance of worldwide medical professionals and thousands of worldwide supporters. It was so great to see a sellout crowd of you in Phoenix this past weekend. It's especially good for us, you know, given that we live and work from our homes. And, you know, I'm here in my home studio. So it's a thrill for me. I'm just here with my dog. My husband's in the other room. I don't get to see all of you, but at the conference to see and meet hundreds of you is just a thrill. And you know, it's true also for Paul and Pierre and all the doctors and nurses and Kelly and Kate and Joyce, all the rest of our team feel that way. It's such a joy to shake hands with, even hug. So many intelligent, caring, forward-thinking physicians, researchers, patients, and savvy donors, and just friends. You folks who come to these conferences and support us all along. You know, we come back saying, yes, all the work was worth it. We are, you know, on the right track because you tell us what we did for you, your families, your loved ones. And plus, we learn so much from each other. We learn about all of the new science, new information. There was a lot. And we have an exciting new study coming about. You're going to hear all about that. But, you know, for the first time ever, we gave awards We gave excellence awards to truly deserving professionals. Neurologist Dr. Suzanne Gosta won our Outstanding Clinical Scientist Award. Mary Beth Pfeiffer, our Freedom Award for really top investigative journalism. Dr. Elizabeth Mumford for Saving the Children, honored for lifetime achievement as a pediatrician. And Dr. Flavio Cattigiani for outstanding contributions to research excellence. It was really lovely, but it wasn't all just work. You know, we had fun too. Music that meant something from talent that had stories to tell and got us dancing. The Defiant were there. And, you know, let me bring on two of our top leaders who were dancing on the dance floor. I saw you, to give you the scoop on the newest developments announced at the conference. Kelly Buman is our executive director. She's a whiz on messaging and marketing and all kinds of communications and keeping us all in line. Yeah, right. That's not easy. But at any rate, we have our beloved chief scientific officer, Dr. Paul Marek. He's going to fill you in on the key scientific developments that came out this weekend. Our nurses are already online to answer questions that you type into Q&A. And one of them, Christina Maros, will be back here with Dr. Christina Carmen to share what they told us about boosting our immune systems for whatever is coming along next. So then I'll be back with some of your questions for Kelly and Paul and our Christinas after they fill you in with all kinds of good information. So Kelly and Paul, take it away.
Well, Paul, do you want to start with any comments from the conference?
It was a fantastic conference. The community was fantastic. The networking was really good. It was the best we've had yet. So, we're looking forward to the next one, whenever that will be. But thank you to Kelly and the team for putting on such a fabulous conference. It was truly it's outstanding.
We were sold out, so we're so excited that was the case. But for those that weren't able to attend, we also will have all the lectures, the filmed lectures, as well as the slides available for you in our Education on Demand. In fact, we'll tell you, we actually have some of those slides actually available for you in a new announcement we're going to make in a couple minutes. So everyone that didn't attend can have an option too. Well, Paul, I can go ahead and jump into a couple announcements we made on the business side, yeah. And then we'll have you talk through cancer. Does that sound good?
Yep, sounds like a plan.
All righty. Well, hi, everybody. I'm going to go ahead and kind of pull up. We made a couple announcements at the conference. We went ahead and one thing we did at the very beginning of the conference, which I thought was really fun, is we used this tool called Slido. And we asked one simple question, how are you feeling today? And it just thrilled our whole team, that excited and hopeful and inspired and curious and grateful and energized were the words that came to be. So I just wanted to share that. That was something that really kind of cheered us up and kind of gave us the energy to kind of do all the hard work for the next 2.5 days. You guys have been with us. This is our group on chat, and you guys have been with us through the very beginning. And everyone has known us for this time as Frontline COVID-19 Critical Care Alliance. In fact, those of you that watched our anniversary episode may have noticed we actually, many of the doctors actually wanted to make the name longer, which is a good thing that Betsy and Joyce and others stepped in to kind of keep it where it was today. But as we move beyond COVID, and that we're still very committed to that, we really want to look at being known as the FLCC Alliance. So we're really kind of formally saying our name now is FLCC Alliance, and we'll continue to be completely dedicated to treating COVID, long COVID, and vaccine injury. That is something we will never abandon, and it's in our DNA. But we also want to build and expand to other chronic diseases. And Paul will talk tonight about some of the great work and and other announcements we have as it relates to using some of the same principles of using repurposed drugs and our approach there to new chronic diseases such as cancer. And some of the things that we actually talked about just before we left on our conference with Dr. Kathleen Reddy. We'll continue to focus on the value of repurposed drugs because they just are not getting the attention when it comes to kind of the big pharma drugs. And we really want to focus on patient empowerment and education. We know that all the patients and the consumers aren't getting the information that they need from their physicians and their their NPs and their nurses. So we really want to make sure that we empower you directly. And actually, we're going to have Dr. Christina Carmen and Christina Morris come on a little bit and talk about a great panel they did at the conference. One thing, and it was great that Jan Yekovich from Epic Times, Ukelic, actually brought this up, but we always remain conflict-free. It's a really kind of a North Star in our DNA that we always put patients over profits. And a big thing that we want to be focused on is really leading a movement with shared values. So one thing you may have seen, I'll go ahead and everyone talk about an elevator pitch. So this is our elevator pitch as we expand: a healthcare nonprofit on a mission to restore trust, integrity, and restore the doctor-patient relationship. And many of you may have seen like a new tagline. Well, that was very purposeful. Our executive team and our board worked for months to kind of pull together the strategic thinking of things that we should do beyond COVID. And one part of that is, how do we build upon our name, FLCC Alliance, and what do we want to say about ourselves? So Honest Medicine is a tagline that we're introducing to you all tonight, but we introduced it live in Phoenix. And it was something that was simple, but was really kind of felt real and genuine to kind of the ethics of who we are. So when you look it up in the dictionary, if you look at the things that define honest in medicine, they just felt really true to kind of our founding in the spirit and the culture that Paul and Pierre really kind of launched in the creation of FLCCC. So that's honest medicine. We actually did a few things with this big tree, and it necessarily will be a device that we look to use, but something that we liked about it when we put some of the work together was the strength, the roots, the fact that there's wisdom. It's a place to gather. It's a symbol of courage, and actually even parts of a tree many times can be used for medicinal purposes, and also can be about longevity too. So it's got a lot of good meaning to it. Another element that we launched at was a new FLCC forums. So one thing we realized is that we as a small team can only do so much, but we have all the people here in our chat. And how can we take that to the next level and create the spirit in what everyone can contribute? But we need a place that's safe and secure, that can't be canceled, where people can post and share information, feedback on our protocols, new ideas of things that we should be looking at, where maybe the professionals in our following can have a place where they can debate doses, different kinds of treatment, care, share scientific studies. And so this is one of the new things that we're launching as a beta, and it's available to all of you guys today as well. So we're inviting you. It's very simple and easy. In fact, it's almost got some Facebook-like kind of functionality without the negatives of being censored on Facebook. But you just go to flcc.net /forums, or in our top bar, you can click on a community and you can find out all about it. But we're inviting everyone today. And one news thing, I just talked about our conference materials. The slides of most of all the presentations are already loaded in the conference forum. This is a perfect example. We can say, come to our forum, the conference forum, and you can actually get all the slides for the lectures that we gave. But we really want to make sure that not just what happened in the room there keeps on going. So even the folks that weren't able to attend, they can look at those, comment on those particular topics, and share more information. Now, we're also creating two different member levels. This is a great way that people can kind of connect, and we'll share additional content and premium services. But it's also a way that every month you can support FLCC Alliance and the good work that we do. So we have a professional forum and a champion forum. And if you kind of look at these codes here, and when you sign in, you'll get all the same information. So don't worry about writing it down now. But right now, everyone will get 3 months free. So you can get in there, try it out. We'll make sure we warn you when it'll convert to paying. And if you're so inclined, we can go ahead and you can sign up for the whole year and you get great savings, whether you're professional or a champion. So that's all I have to share, Paul.
You did
lots of new things that we're building. I guess I'll just wrap up with saying a lot of new capabilities that we're building so that we can really mobilize our army, both of professionals and of everyday people, to kind of help us do more good work and have a greater impact.
Good job there, Kelly. So we did a session at the conference on cancer. So I opened up with a lecture, which I'm going to give a few of the slides, and then we have some interesting news and an interesting announcement. So I'm going to share my screen and There we go. So I'm going to be talking just a brief introduction on cancer care. And so just so people can understand, currently heart disease is the commonest cause of death, followed by cancer. But as we're going to see in the next 10 years, this is going to flip. And cancer will become the commonest cause of death in the US and Western nations. One out of two men and one out of three women will develop cancer during their lifetime. So as of last year, there were 2 million people diagnosed with cancer in the US and about 600,000 deaths. So this is a really important disease. And when we look at the common types of cancers in women, breast, lung, melanoma, colorectal cancer. When we look at men, prostate, lung, colorectal cancer, melanoma, and bladder. So this shows the distribution of the cancer types by gender. And this is what the scary data is. Multiple projections and have demonstrated that the burden of cancer will continue to rise both within the US and globally, and will become the commonest chronic disease and the commonest cause of death. And you can see that the risk of cancer is increasing at a rapid rate. Traditional cancer therapy has some place, with chemotherapy, surgery, radiotherapy, but it does have enormous limitations. And the improvement in outcome with cancer over the last 30 years has but barely improved. The other thing that's important, and the oncologists don't talk about this, is that there are some diseases, some cancers, for which chemotherapy is curable. These are listed here. So, for example, many of the leukemias, lymphomas, and testicular cancer, these cancers are cured by chemotherapy, but they make up about 5% of the burden of cancer. For a bunch of cancers, the chemotherapy improves survival. It's not curative and can slightly prolong survival. And you see the list here. But for many cancers, chemotherapy just increases the burden of disease, the burden of suffering, and the complications, and does not improve quality of life or survival. And so we're talking about colorectal cancer, prostate cancer, pancreatic cancer, brain tumors, melanoma. So clearly one can see that chemotherapy, although it's offered almost by all oncologists, there are enormous limitations. And the current paradigm of cancer is considered a chromosomal disease, and the chemotherapy is directed at damaging the chromosomes. However, there's overwhelming data now that suggests cancer is a metabolic disease. Thomas Seyfried from Boston University has recently popularized this approach. And clearly, it makes sense to treat patients, to treat this as a metabolic disease rather than as a chromosomal disease, which really forms part of the foundation of our treatment algorithm. So what we've done, as I'm sure you're all aware, is that, I've written a monograph and we've put together metabolic interventions to control cancer. So on the slide, I've listed the top 10 interventions. And we always start with a low carbohydrate, high fat ketogenic diet, because as we said, this is a metabolic disease. Cancer feeds on glucose, and you want to deprive the malignant cells of glucose. Exercise, stretch reduction, and sleep are really important in improving quality of life improving the chances of a remission. And then we have a number of repurposed drugs that are listed here in order of priority: vitamin D, melatonin, green tea, metformin, curcumin, mebendazole, and ivermectin. We're going to talk a little bit about ivermectin. Surprisingly, ivermectin has been proven to be a highly effective drug for a broad range of cancers. It seems to be effective at quite a low dose, omega-3 fatty acids and berberine. So while the monograph lists over 30 different interventions, these are the ones that we recommend as a starting point. Now, clearly, the approach to every patient needs to be individualized based on whether it's the cancer is curable with chemo or provides only palliation. And therefore, as chemo plays less of an important role, metabolic therapy and repurposed drugs would appear to be much more important. So the management needs to be personalized. The repurposed drugs and metabolic therapy can be used as adjuncts to standard chemotherapy. And the data clearly shows that patients getting chemotherapy have much better quality of life and have a much better survival when combined with repurposed drugs and metabolic therapy. So, this is Dr. Reddy, and we're going to talk about Dr. Reddy and what we're doing with Dr. Reddy. So Dr. Reddy gave a presentation describing her experience with ivermectin, and this was patient number one. This was a poor man who saw Dr. Reddy over 18 months ago at a time where he had metastatic prostate cancer. He had been given weeks to live, and it was quite clear that he was dying. Dr. Reddy started Mr. Mann on ivermectin. She then added metformin. And here we are, 18 months down the road. You can see he's a picture of health. He was on the stage laughing and was quite entertaining. And Dr. Reddy's treated over 50 such patients with outstanding results. So with that, I'm going to speak about the exciting research project that we're going to do. So, as a consequence of the book, we've been interfacing with many, many clinicians, but we've developed an association with Dr. Reddy. What I didn't really realize is that there are hundreds of clinicians around the world that are using ivermectin for the treatment as a repurposed drug to treat cancer. So obviously, this isn't, widely known because people do this under the radar, much like COVID. But I was astonished to discover how many clinicians are actually treating patients with ivermectin with very good results. So what we've decided to do is we're embarking on an observational study. So this is a non-interventional observational study. Dr. Reddy was the impetus for us doing the study, and she will be one of our study advisors. So we have teamed up with five clinical centers that will be conducting the research. We are open to other clinicians joining our study. This is purely an observational, non-interventional study. Each center treats the patients the way they deem fit and the way the patients want to be treated. So the patients dictate the treatment they get. This is a discussion the patients have with their providers, and then they decide on what path they want to follow. And what we will be just be doing is we will be collecting the patient's data and we'll be observing what's happening. This is much like the Framingham study. You collect a lot of data and then you analyze the data. And this is an example of a real world experience. You can see in the slide, Dr. Goodyear will be one of the participating centers. Pierre Corey's clinic will be another participating center. Dr. Molly James and Chuck Meekins will be involved. So for patients who are interested, you know, they if they would like to contact one of these clinicians, they can learn more at our website. They can read more information concerning the different clinicians. And if they are interested, they can make contact. And then, you know, they can undergo treatment by these clinicians. And clearly, if there are providers who are interested in treating patients with cancer with repurposed drugs, they should contact us. And, you know, we would be interested in them in joining our group of practitioners. And as I said, this is a relationship between the patient and his clinician. They will decide what course to follow, what repurposed drugs to use, what dietary interventions. And it certainly does not exclude conventional chemotherapy. And by pooling all of this data together, it should give us a good idea of what works and what doesn't work. The primary endpoint of the study is 5-year survival. So obviously it's quite a way down the road, but we will be looking at many other markers, tumor markers, quality of life, and 1, 2, and 3-year survival. So we will likely have preliminary analyses as we go along. So I would suggest if people are interested to go to the website. If they know of patients who are struggling with cancer, you know, we obviously recommend early treatment, much like COVID. The earlier patients with cancer initiate therapy with dietary interventions and repurposed drugs, the better the outcome. This seems to be a really, you know, we're really excited about this study. At this time, we're putting the protocol together. We're working on a consent form because clearly patients will need to sign informed consent. Once all that's in order, we're hoping to get an IRB to approve our study. And we hope to get IRB approval before we actually begin the data collection phase. If anyone has any questions, they can, you know, put it in the question in the chat or ask Christina and Samantha, and we will try and answer. But we're really excited about this new project. I think it represents what we stand for, you know, establishing the patient-physician relationship where patients can decide the kind of treatment they want. And obviously, you know, a much more holistic approach with good dietary interventions, lifestyle interventions, and repurposed drugs. So, Kelly, that was my little story. I'm not sure if you wanted to add anything.
Well, I think this is so huge, Paul, because there are so many people that are in need. And you had the cancer care monograph in the review that so many people have already taken advantage of. But after meeting Dr. Reddy, we just felt this was so much in the sweet spot of what we do as an organization. So what we're going to be doing is really kind of helping to pull together the individual data from all of these clinics. And we're not going to wait for 5 years, Paul, right? We're going to do interim readouts, you know, in the course of the study and share that. And I think there's great value that we can bring to each of these clinics, and they'll each be doing their own individual, they'll pull from a protocol that you're putting out, but they will actually pull and do individualized care depending on the particular patient, the kind of cancer that they have. And so I think this will provide great learning because it'll be all different kinds of models that they'll be will be able to collect and track.
Yeah, absolutely. We're not telling the clinicians how to treat patients. This is a decision that they will make based on their best judgment and on the interaction they have with the patient. So this should give us a very rich data source to be able to filter through the data and figure out what works and what doesn't work.
When anyone can post any questions, I know we're going to answer some questions as well, but we have the slide up. Livia had the slide up for us earlier, but we described the whole program, who's participating, and this is something that people can share very simply at flcc.net/cancer study. And we want to hear from you. And I think also the forums are a great place. And again, just to clarify, I've seen some kind of comments in the chat. We have free forums that are public forums, and anyone can participate. All you have to do is give your email so that, and you can create any kind of name, just like you do on Twitter. You can have your own handle, whatever you want to call yourself, or you can use your real name. And that can also be a place where we kind of share information around what people are learning, what they're experiencing, that can help us as well.
We do have a lot of questions coming in on this, Kelly.
Yeah.
And we can come back with that.
We're going to come back, I think, and ask all the questions in a few minutes, yes, right? Yes, okay.
We also have one of the most popular sessions over the weekend was how to bulletproof your immune system for whatever is going to be coming at us next. And we had a packed, it was overflowing, actually. And this is where our two Christinas, Christina Morrows, who is our CRNA, who's always on answering questions, she's going to jump in here for a minute with Christina Carmen, who is a doctor who does marvelous homeopathic medicine. And these two have really, they've really been working together on teaching people how best to stay healthy and to get more healthy than, whatever you're doing, if you're eating all kinds of sugar and junk and lazing about and not doing anything. So why don't you share some of the wealth that you shared with that packed room with everybody out there?
Well, Christina, I want to know, what was your favorite thing that we discussed during the panel?
Oh my goodness, there were so many things actually, but one that really struck me was people were really curious about what they can take as far as nutraceuticals and herbs and, if they were to be ill or if they were, they've had something and it's lingering and ongoing, what can they do to sort of overcome or accelerate the healing? So that was really, that was a real highlight for me. There were certainly a lot of questions afterwards asking, can I take this and can I take that? And how much vitamin D should I be taking and all of these things? So it was really quite something. And I think the other one that struck me was actually how, there's so much information out there as far as what to eat, when to eat, how to eat, how to nourish our bodies, that maybe the noise just gets so confusing that actually we don't know what to do. So there were a lot of questions and, around, dietary intake and how to eat and food timing and food pairing and sort of the intermittent fasting and that those kind of energetics that we, that I think we can certainly, we can have more discussions around. Certainly as Dr. Merrick was talking about cancer and the prevalence of cancer and how actually diet and lifestyle plays such a huge role in this. And we're looking at this as a metabolic disease. It's our immune system that supports all of this as well. So, there's a lot of really beautiful golden nuggets there that we can utilize and to really support and move forward with, I think.
Yeah, I really enjoyed like teaching people about, because I have personal experience with people who don't like to take pills. And so I enjoyed explaining to people about how there's different forms of supplements they can take, like liquid and powder form, and how you can even cheat and get a lot of vitamins and greens powders. And I brought this for show and tell tonight on our webinar. My new favorite toy is this little bitty mixer where I can mix my greens powder, my protein, and my adaptogen powders in this thing. And I can take it with me, drink it, and I can wash it out and use it as a water bottle so I stay hydrated, which was a big take-home message during our panel. And then my other little favorite cheat thing is having these little things that I like to load up once a week with my evening and my morning supplements that I like to take. So it was fun telling people about realistic ways they can achieve their goals. And then I really enjoy talking about reducing stress. I know that you like that too. So I enjoy telling people about different ways to do that. not just yoga and mind or meditation, but also taking a walk or finding something that you love to do to reduce stress, and scheduling in that time to take time for yourself, like you would make any other appointment in your life, like going to the dentist or whatever. Those are my favorite things to talk about. Yeah. Do you want to add anything to that?
Well, so much, but I think just touching on the supplementation, I think another really important point that came out that weekend is that actually not all supplements are created equal. So it's actually really important to sort of choose your source and where you're getting it. And also just taking something for the sake of taking something isn't going to support you in the way that it should if you're not addressing those basics first. So hydration is really, really key. And diet first, always look at whole foods first before you're adding in lots and lots and lots of things. Our bodies are incredible, incredible, incredible machines, and they're energetic machines, and they respond to these beautiful energetic vibrations that we get from the food that we're eating. So this is really important to look at that first. You know, what's the energetic vibration of a Chick-fil-A burger?
I don't even talk about it.
It's, you know, but compare that to something that's lush and that's, you know, or even, you know, whatever it is that you, whatever you choose as far as that's concerned, but think of it from that perspective, encouraging that first, and then making sure that the supplementation that you're taking is individual. You know, the takeaway there is really that, you know, supplementation can be as suppressive as it can be supportive if we're not targeting the right things for us specifically. And supplements don't really work if our body's not in a place to properly receive them. So I think that's an important one to look at. Diet first, sleep first, you know, cover those beautiful basic things that we forget or we've forgotten. Those are really, really key ones. And then obviously looking at that stress, the stress management, that's a huge driver when it comes to disease. And certainly when I was studying many, many years ago, that was one of the biggest things that we talked about, is actually stress impacts everything.
Mm-hmm.
So having, you know, finding those personal ways for you and making it a priority, I think that's an important one as well. You know, schedule the time in your day. There is enough time for this if it matters to you. And it has to matter, because your health will be impacted.
And I also want to add, doing things with intent, setting an intention, like devoting yourself with the discipline to make the change, to want to be that change, to already feel that change and believe that change is happening. And then you literally manifest that change with these intentions. And if you just work on something for 2 weeks and build a new habit, then it doesn't even become a habit anymore. It becomes a lifestyle change. And it's something a lot of motivational speakers speak about, is these types of ideas. And which was really fun in our conference thread, is we had all these little handy tips and guides on like mindful eating and mindful walks and yoga videos and breath technique videos, actually videos that you and I have done. So if our followers jump into those community threads, join our FLCCC communities, and they can also see everything we dropped in that thread and maybe find some use in those teaching aids and tips. So just another incentive to join our community's movement.
It also doesn't have to feel overwhelming, guys. I think that's another really important one to note, that, you know, whenever you're making changes in your life, it's not about doing all the things all at once, because that in many ways sets you up for failure. You know, one thing that you feel, this resonates with me. This is something that I can work towards, and start doing that consistently daily. So it becomes, as Christina was saying, a real habitual, real sort of ritual kind of energy in your life. And that's something that you can then integrate. And then suddenly you're like, oh, I have some space for some more. Let me add in a few more little bits here and there. And suddenly you come out the other side and you're like, wow, actually my life has made, you know, a really big turnaround. And actually it's been really, really subtle and incremental. But when you look back, you're like, geez, that's really fantastic, because you've done something consistently, but you started simply. that really feels right for you. So maybe the simple thing is, I'm going to drink more water consistently throughout the day. I'm going to make a commitment to get my 7 to 9 hours of sleep and protect the sleep hygiene around my sleep time. So I'm really looking at, you know, obviously light exposure and you know, energies, and I'm not eating too late. I'm really encouraging the intermittent fasting energy.
Yes.
And there's a type of intermittent fasting that will suit most people, shall I say. So looking at that, you know, there's a lot of things that we can do to fill in those spaces, but make it personal to you, what works for you, and then build on that.
And another thing I wanted to add is these stressors that we feel in our life, is addressing those things immediately, taking the responsibility to confront those stressors, because when you do, you can make that step to make space for the healing so you can make that change for a better lifestyle. That's something that you and I think we like to spend a lot more time focusing on in the future of the organization, is teaching people how to work on self-improvement and releasing things they don't need anymore so they can make space for healthy things. So
that's
if we could talk for an hour, I'm sure we could.
If we can find, you know, there was an amazing podcast that I listened to recently by an amazing British doctor who I revere and I love. I just love the way he speaks to begin with. But he was saying that actually happiness, you know, finding happiness fundamentally within our lives. And I know this is really challenging because we live in a very complex world and we all come from a different kind of you know, different walks of life, shall we say. So challenging, but if we can find that happiness, actually it shows that we make much better choices long-term from our health and from our decisions, from our response, which actually, you know, has an impact on our stress, obviously. You know, are you an angry person? Or are you a really fidgety person? Are you really worried about things constantly? You know, all of this really, really impact that, those health choices long-term, and whether you genuinely want to nourish your body or whether you are going to run and, you know, stand in that Chick-fil-A line. So
yeah,
Chick-fil-A as an example today, but you know,
it is a really tasty fast food place. It's probably a good example, even though we don't eat it.
It's full of MSG though, guys, so stay away. It's not good.
You know what people should do is grow their own food. Shanti from the FLCC and I are obsessed with growing our food from scraps. Like, I have these little cuttings all over my house. And I even like grew my own little green onions and put in my little salad and my little greens that I grew in my little garden, a pot. Like, that is so much fun and such a healthy, mindful choice that you can do. It's like such a, you know, mindfulness is focusing on the things in the moment. It's like the joy of creating something like that. And it makes your meal so much more intentional to share with your family or to enjoy by yourself. Yeah. So
I mean, even the art of creating a meal, and I hear it so many times from my patients, are like, "Oh, I hate."
Because you're a chef too, aren't you, Christina?
I trained as a natural chef, so I love food and I love food energetics, and I think there's such beauty in nourishing ourselves, and this is the basis of all of this that we talk about, the lifestyle and the how are we nourishing our beautiful bodies. But if you start off the energy like, "Oh, I hate cooking," and "Oh gosh, I've got to do this," that energy is going to go into the food that you're preparing. And it works that way. You know, you're already thinking, "Oh, I'll just make something really quick and pop it in, you know, in the microwave or whatever it is, or I'll just run out or I'll get an Uber." And I'm not saying that those are inherently bad to do occasionally, but what are you doing consistently? That's what you need to watch.
Meal planning too. We've talked about that before too, right, Christina? And taking the time out intentionally, like when you have the time in the week, maybe on the weekends, to do your grocery shopping and do your meal planning so you can maybe use your leftovers to eat. And then you have like a series of healthy foods to eat throughout the week.
Yeah.
In fact, we have, you know, we've have that vitamin guide that we made to help people select healthy vitamins. All this can be found in tools and guides. We have other meal plans that we've made. I'm trying to remember exactly which guide it was, and I can't remember because we made so many.
We have in the ketone index, GKX. Yeah, there's some guides in there. And guys, I think when it comes to any of our meal plans, again, this is approach it with an energetic. This is not we're telling you to eat this. This is to give you some inspiration, because I do think that people struggle. They're like, "Oh, well, what do I eat now? And what do I eat? And I have to think of this again." But at least if you have a little bit of a guide or a little bit of an idea, you can sit down on Sunday and spend an hour. And this is what I do. I can give you guys as an example, I spent an hour and I'm like, oh, just pre-make some of my brown rice and my quinoa and I can make my beans. So I'm not using canned goods, essentially. Like, it's cheaper actually if you pre-cook a lot of these things and you're using buying it in bulk. You know, I can maybe roast a chicken and then that cut off the meat and then the carcass goes into a broth and I'm making a broth that I can then use for sauces. Like, there's so many little things that you can do that really easily just, and it doesn't take very long. So to prep, to give you guys a little bit of idea, but yeah, don't, you know, you don't necessarily have to follow it to a letter. It's more for an inspiration. Okay. So really bring in. The idea is that you want to put your stamp on it so that this becomes yours, not something that we tell you, no, like, you eat this. You know, get the inspiration. If you don't have an ingredient, find something else to add in there.
We have a question for you, and that is from Arabella Childs, who says, I read that older people can no longer create vitamin D in their bodies from sunshine, so they have to get it from supplements. Can you comment on this, please? And then I must say, most of the questions are about the cancer study, so we'll bring the doctors back in after this.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm sure Dr. Merrick will put some insight in this, because we've talked very, very extensively on vitamin D and vitamin D supplementation. And if I'm honest, yes, I think it does. Your vitamin D utilization from outside sources goes down, along with many other things like B12. We see iron utilization. All of this will decrease simply because, you know, we're more susceptible to oxidative stress. Our cells are aging. But as a whole, I'm a big proponent and big believer that most people, if not all people, probably need to be supplementing from vitamin D, because we're simply not getting enough from our diet and we are not spending enough time with exposing big parts of our bodies to sunlight consistently. Okay. And if you're living in those environments where you're, you know, 35 degrees latitude north and above from like September until April, you're simply not getting it from the sun at all. So, you know, I mean, Dr. Merrick, please, your insight on this. But
yeah, no, you're absolutely right. So your ability to, you know, synthesize vitamin D goes down with age. Also, increased skin pigmentation. So people with dark skin are unable to make it. People who are obese, people, you know, north and south of the equator. So multiple factors come into play. And Christine is correct. You know, unless you spend, you know, like Dr. Mercola does, you spend most of your day naked outdoors, you're simply just not going to be able to make enough vitamin D, and you need to supplement with vitamin D. And it is exceedingly safe. It's inexpensive, safe, and has many benefits, you know, in terms of diabetes, depression, cancer, Alzheimer's disease. So, you know, it is really a vitamin for all seasons.
And it's vitamin D3 with K2 is the best way to take it.
Yeah.
And it supplements with those combined in it. So it's very easy to find.
It is. And I would also look at, sorry, Betsy, just one thing to add. I look at also those cofactor nutrients that really support your utilization of vitamin D. So look at magnesium, you know, look at hydration, you know, how are you taking your vitamin D? In what form? Is it a fat soluble form, or is it sublingual, or are you taking liposomally? Like, look at how you're taking it and making sure that you're actually getting the best sort of bang for your buck, so that your body's actually utilizing it well.
Now, here's a question that you, Christina, might want to be on this one. Francis Scherzer says, why is it important to eat protein before a carbohydrate in our meals?
Yeah, so that goes to the glucose goddess. So the order in which you eat food has a significant impact on your blood glucose profile. So if you eat carbohydrates at the beginning of the meal, which you do at a restaurant, you eat bread and carbohydrates, you start off with a big spike in blood glucose. But if you eat your veggies first, then your protein, and you eat your carbohydrates at the end of the meal, so it can be exactly the same constituents. You have a much flatter blood glucose profile with less insulin resistance. So the order in which you actually eat the food does make a difference. Yes. So what the restaurants do is they give you bread up front, and they do that on purpose because it spikes your glucose, which then causes high glucose, high insulin, and stimulates your appetite so you eat more. So the worst thing to start off a meal is with carbohydrates such as bread. Would you agree, Christina?
Absolutely, 100%.
I'd add fat to it if you're going to eat it. I mean, I wouldn't eat the bread first, but I'd definitely smear it with butter. And not sugary butter, like regular butter.
Yeah, but even then, so like the carbohydrates before a meal is not energetic. Again, talking about energetics of food, but when we look at digestibility, protein takes longer to digest. So that is often where the suggestion comes from. Carbohydrates, simple carbohydrates in particular, will digest very, very quickly and turn very quickly into sugar, which is what Dr. Merrick is talking about, these huge spikes that we get, which then you want to crave more, because actually from a nutrition perspective, your body hasn't received the nutrients it needs. So it's like, well, give me more. So then you'll want more. And this is where those cravings come from. And this is what we see a lot of the yo-yoing and blood sugar throughout the day, where people will fall or sort of get very fatigued post a meal or post lunch. It's because their breakfast, maybe, for example, hasn't been optimal, because we're then seeing this kind of yo-yo. Then they've had another meal and then they go, shoot. They really flop. So really try, and we talked about this, didn't we, Christina, at our breakout about food pairing. So a veggie starter, guys, and this goes against our conventional breakfast where we eat cereal, which is cardboard and sugar, where we eat those things for breakfast. So veggie starter, then protein and fats, because they actually support digestion, the two together. And then if you take carbohydrates, it needs to be in simple form. Okay. The fiber is really, really important. The fiber will help the protein, and the fiber will help that glucose spike.
Thank you so much. We have a lot of questions now about the cancer study. And Rebecca Schultz wants to know, will botanical and other supplements be part of the cancer observational study?
Yes. Yeah, so, we obviously have the cancer monograph, but each provider can decide what particular therapeutics they want to use. So, for example, Dr. Goodyear uses IV vitamin C, we're not restricting what the practitioners use and or what the patients want. So, the patient and the physician will develop an agreement amongst themselves as to the course of action. So the study is not limited to any particular repurposed drug or nutraceutical.
Here's a question from Maria Caballo. Dr. Merrick, is there a mechanism theorized for ivermectin attacking cancer cells? Besides observational, are there any cell studies planned?
Oh, so there are multiple. If you go to the literature, there are multiple studies that have been done in cell culture and animal models showing that ivermectin works through at least 12 different biochemical pathways, promoting cancer cell death or apoptosis, improving the tumor microenvironment, targeting the tumor stem cells, interfering with glucose metabolism. So there are multiple pathways through which ivermectin has been shown to work. And these have been published in, reputable peer-reviewed journals. So, people can't dismiss this as, bogus. This is based on, high-level scientific inquiry that has demonstrated without question of doubt that in experimental models in cell culture, that ivermectin is highly effective in promoting the death of cancer cells.
How come we didn't know this before?
Well, Betsy, I didn't know it either, because it just goes to show. And so, when I started doing the book, I was stunned at how much information is out there. There are over 1,400 peer-reviewed articles that I refer to, but it's hidden. Oncologists won't tell you this, primarily because they don't know it and don't want to know it. And many clinicians don't know it either, but the data is out there, but it's hidden. And, I think this is what COVID has shown us, is that there's a certain narrative that they play and they want us to believe. And there's certainly for, across the board for chronic medical disorders, a whole host of more naturopathic integrative interventions which actually target the underlying disease.
There's a question here from Rumble for you, Dr. Marek. Is the spike the reason that cancers are on the rise?
So that's a really good question. And the answer is yes. There's been a absolute uptake in cancers, particularly in young patients, colorectal cancer in young people, melanoma, brain tumors, breast cancer. So, you know, data from the UK shows an exponential increase in cancers in young people. We see the same trend in the US, and it seems the spike is involved. A recent article talks about the multi-hit theory of spike protein, how through various mechanisms, the spike protein increases the risk of cancer. So this is going to become a really serious issue, you know, considering how many people have been vaccinated, particularly young people, teenagers. And we don't know how long the risk of cancer exists post-jab. You know that for sudden cardiac death, it extends about a year after the last booster. But in terms of the risk of cancer, we don't know exactly what that risk is and for how long it lasts. So, you know, we may be facing a crisis, particularly in young people.
A question from Laura Chamber. Dr. Marek, are you limiting the study to specific types of cancers?
No, absolutely not. Any cancer. Patient has any cancer anywhere in the body. You know, that as long as the patient wants to be treated, and, you know, they can be treated. So we're not limiting it to any stage of cancer or any type of cancer.
Natalie Stacy wants to know, is the number of participants in the cancer study limited?
No. So the more the better. We hope we at least can get 500 patients, maybe 1,000. So the more patients we get, the better our sample size, the better the statistical power we have. So the more patients, the merrier. There's no limit as to the type of patient, the type of cancer, or the stage of cancer. And so the more patients we have, it will allow us much greater insight into understanding the different treatment modalities.
Here's a question from a viewer. What specific biomarkers measure or indicate if one has cancer? Would the case be to monitor the specific biomarkers for all those who are vaccine injured as well?
So that's a difficult question to answer. So certain tumors have specific biomarkers. So for example, patients with prostate cancer have the PSA. So the PSA is a reasonably good marker of prostate cancer. Then for colonic and other cancers, there's the CA. We don't have a PAN marker that can look for a biomarker for look for cancer, but there are innovative new technologies that are being developed that can actually detect circulating cancer cells in the bloodstream. So this may be a new and exciting technology that patients can be screened for. But, you know, what I would suggest is someone who has been vaccinated, they need to go on the anti-spike protocol. They need to do whatever they can to get rid of spike. Because we hypothesize that the greater your spike load, the more spike in the body, the greater your risk of developing cancer. So the more times you've been boosted, the more times you've had long COVID, you certainly want to look at the, you know, the I prevent protocol or the post-vaccine protocol, because there are things you can do to limit your spike load. And theoretically, by doing so, you will reduce your risk of cancer. But, you know, that's still a hypothesis we need to prove.
Here's a question from Rumble. Should ivermectin be taken with a fatty food when taken for cancer, like it is for COVID, for better absorption? Stacy asks that one.
Yeah, absolutely. So it is fat soluble, so the absorption of ivermectin is much better with a fatty meal. So in order to get better blood levels, it's recommended to take it with a meal.
Here is a question from a viewer. Should primary care physicians be screening for cancer earlier, such as 18 years old or even younger now?
Yeah, so that's a difficult question to answer. I think one has to have some kind of a pragmatic approach. I think if someone has been vaccinated, one which includes a lot of people, one has to have a lower threshold for looking for cancers. Certainly, if patients have had previous cancer that was in remission and then were vaccinated or had long COVID, they certainly should be screened for cancer recurrence. Unfortunately, we don't have a simple cancer test. Hopefully in the future, there may be such a thing.
Here's a couple of good questions here. Does the cancer protocol help with blood cancers as well as solid organ tumors, or are these treated and looked at differently?
No, exactly the same. So for example, for ivermectin, the published studies that are available were for leukemia and lymphoma. And so there is published data on the use of ivermectin for those tumors. But we do know that ivermectin is very effective for solid tumors as well. You know, the example was Mr. Mann with prostatic cancer. Dr. Molly James had a patient with stage 4 colonic cancer that responded. So what seems to be remarkable about this remarkable drug is that it works across the board for hematological malignancies as well as solid tumors. The only exception for ivermectin are brain tumors, because ivermectin doesn't cross the blood-brain barrier. So in patients who have primary brain tumors or metastases, we do recommend mebendazole as well as many of the other therapies.
Jody Breitfeller asks, and she's a nurse, do you have to wait after stopping chemo before starting alternative modalities like high-dose vitamin C and ivermectin?
Absolutely not. In fact, the efficacy of chemotherapy, and this is well established, is so your chemotherapy becomes much more effective. The toxicity is less. It's well tolerated if you concurrently do dietary and repurposed drugs at the same time. So absolutely, they should be done concurrently.
Here is Molly Becker saying, is cancer increased from contracting COVID if you were never vaccinated? And if so, is it increased with multiple COVID infections?
So it's related. We think it's related to your load of spike protein. So the highest load is with vaccination and multiple vaccinations. But we have seen recurrence of tumors in people who've had long COVID or previous COVID infection. Obviously, the worst scenario is people with long COVID who then get vaccinated.
I have a question here that is likely for Kelly. Let me go back. Tom wants to know, is there a free tier to the community forums?
Absolutely. And I did probably do a very good job of mentioning that. So I've been trying to kind of put it in the chat. But the forums is like a whole new place and anyone can sign up for it on the website overall. But we also have the two special areas where we're going to be doing kind of more unique content and premium content. But I talked about a lot of the conference slides. Those are all in the free area of the website. And the public forum is for everybody. You know, so all we need is you to simply register with your email. And we've already got over, you know, almost 500 people that are already there. So I'd love to get some of our chatters that are always on our weekly calls there, because then there can be information beyond the webinar that can be shared as well.
And so, here's a question that you probably will jump in on as well from Natalie. She says, in my opinion, the biggest challenge for everybody out there is that you can address is helping us find local doctors, especially oncologists and cardiologists. Can you devote some time and resources to doing that?
Absolutely. In fact, you know, our technology team was working really hard to get this up and running for the conference and for all of you today. But the how we can enhance the directories is a huge need, and we see it. And we also believe the communities can help us. So before we get a lot of them there, there might be ways that we can start different threads or discussions on help me find a person in my area that is trusted. So I think by the combination of the two, our goal is to be able to help with that. But we need your help. So we don't have all the answers. And I think this is part of what we're realizing is we're limited by the number of people on our team, but we don't have to be if we have these forums and everyone. We've got now a way to take all this great information and these tools and bring them to the organization.
And I think this will have to be the last question. We ran over, of course, but good material. And this is for Paul. Paul, can you speak for a moment on the new iRecover post-vax protocol and the shedding docs that are both on the website now?
Yeah, so we have updated the iRecover protocol. And so I was a bit reluctant to do this, but then I realized, you know, I needed to do this. And I was surprised that there are actually a number of published studies that have looked at long COVID in particular, looking at a number of therapeutic interventions. So based on some published data, we have updated the iRecover protocol. So, you know, I would recommend that people would see this. There are a number of new additions, including L-arginine, vagal nerve stimulation, the MicroArc device, photobiomodulation. So we have updated the protocol. In terms of shedding, Pierre and the Western doctor have done a pretty remarkable review of shedding. And Pierre has written a pretty extensive document on shedding. So the bottom line about shedding is it actually happens. It's a real thing. Patients can be shed. People can be shed on. And they can become symptomatic from being shed upon. So it would be, you know, it would be informative for people to read Pierre's very well-resourced document on shedding. And obviously, you know, the bottom line is try and avoid someone who's been recently vaccinated. And those who are very symptomatic after being shed upon can be treated much like they are vaccine injured.
And Paul, we also have the iPrevent vaccine injury. So under the prevention area, under our treatment strategies, if you're nervous about that, that's a place that you can take that has very safe and, you know, kind of easily accessible kind of tools that people can take if they're interested. And then if they're experiencing actually any kind of acute symptoms, that's where you might go to the post-vaccine protocol for some guidance as well. Right, Paul?
Yep.
Okay.
So there is a lot of new information on the website. You know, they updated iRecover, the shedding document, the cancer document. So, you know, Kelly and the team are doing a good job in updating the protocol. And of course, the two Christinas are furiously busy with their tools and their
guides.
Yeah, I know there's questions in the chat about intermittent fasting. We have a guide for. We have an eat well guide. We have a keto guide. They have kind of daily things you can do guide. So if you actually go to our tools and guide section, or just use a search function bar and just search intermittent fasting, you can see all the things on our website that can be a tool for you. So
don't have to take notes here. It just, you got it. It's all there. This is easy. Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, thank you. Thank you, Christina, Kelly, Paul, you know, wonderful. And we will do more next week, you know, but we just keep continuing and Paul keeps updating and studying and there's a lot more to do. So thank you. I've got just a few announcements for folks at home.
I just want to finish off by saying thank you to Betsy and also our followers, our troops, our warriors, because without them, you know, we wouldn't be able to do with what, you know, what we do. And obviously, you know, the Cancer Project will involve some resources. So there is a donate button on the page and would be obviously, you know, thrilled if people would donate specifically to this protocol.
You know, that's so exciting because I think of the Framingham study that Dr. Ruddy said this is modeled after, where you follow over time and you see what really is working with people and what has happened and how their lives have changed. It's very exciting to see that. This can be very big. So wonderful. Thank you. Now, as you heard this evening, one of the areas we will be focusing on is this observational study to find out which repurposed drugs can really help patients. So visit flccc.net/cancer-study to learn more. It's there. Now then, Cancer Care Book. If you haven't yet read Dr. Marek's Cancer Care Guide, you can find it now either as a download, a paperback, or as a Kindle using the links on the screen. Be sure to grab a copy today and to share it with friends and family. I've done it, so please, you too. It's magnificent. Now then, as we mentioned a couple of weeks ago, the one and only Dr. Bean has shared his last episodes of Long Stories Short with us, as he is stepping away to focus more on his own education platform, Dr. Bean Medical Lectures. But he is never too far away, so we will continue to share his life-saving videos with you. We thank Dr. Bean for his incredible 87 episodes of this wonderful series. You can catch the final two on our FLCCC Alliance, Rumble, and Odyssey channels, or on our website at flccc.net/Dr. Bean. And with that, you know, well, we have our nurses who've been answering questions. One of them you recognize, Christina Morris, is back. And Samantha, you've been wildly busy tonight. And with Samantha, how have the questions been going? Hello, Samantha. How are you?
Hi, doing well. How are you doing, Betsy?
Very well. Happy to be, you know, happy to have been at the conference. It was just so good. So lots of questions.
Yeah, lots on cancer and
some cancer.
And Samantha, you take it because you answer more than me.
Oh, how to keep your immune system strong. And Christina's kind of guided us there. So that's great. One thing that I kind of wanted to mention, Betsy, was that a lot of our immune system is in our gut, right? So your gut not only is your immune system, but it's a place that you produce vitamins. All of those little bacteria that are in your gut are producing vitamins for you and cofactors to make those vitamins work. So really, you can get really complex, or you can just come back to taking care of your gut. And one of the things that maybe we want to start with is, of course, what Dr. Marek has spoken of countless times, but intermittent fasting. So if you want a fun fact about that, Akkermansia is a bacteria that lives in our gut. And it is responsible for breaking down our mucin layer so that it can be built back up. And that's such a big piece of gut health, is that mucin layer where Akkermansia lives. So its role is to keep you from having leaky gut. All the things that cause leaky gut starts when that mucin layer gets broken down. So Akkermansia breaks down that mucin when it doesn't have food coming in. And that allows mucin to be reproduced. And now you've got this beautiful new layer that's protecting your colonocytes. So it's just all to say that starting with your gut is really important. So all of the dietary recommendations, intermittent fasting, all of those things really do help to keep these bacteria in the right balance so that our body gets to stay in balance.
Wonderful news.
And what's right, we had lots of questions about gut, so I thought I'd try to pull that together.
We'll come back. We'll do this again. I can be sure that we will be having lots more talks about gut health and every other kind of thing that we can do for our health. But thank you so much for sharing that, and thank you for answering all of the questions. And I have to say, you know, thank you folks out there, you know, all of you, our FLCCC family, near and far. Thank you for making all of this possible, all of it. You know, you are the reason we're able to do what we do, the reason we're able to create a healthcare revolution. We hope you have a wonderful evening or morning, wherever you are, and we will see you back here next week. But once again, we have some of your great My Stories to share with you. So see you next week, but keep watching.
It's time for a healthcare revolution.
It's time to put patients before profits.
It's time to be a rebel.
To be bold enough to say, no, this has been going on too long.
To be bold enough to say, yes, I dream of something better.
Rebels defy the ordinary. They are unconventional thinkers, game changers, disruptors.
Rebels refuse to conform, and they're not afraid to stand out.
They would risk everything for their patients, because they took an oath to help, or at least to do no harm.
These rebels reject bureaucracy. They put healing over paperwork.
For them, it's not just a job, it's a mission.
A mission to provide comfort, to find solutions, to show kindness.
Because sometimes a touch of empathy is the most potent medicine.
These are not just practitioners.
They're revolutionaries, challenging outdated systems and restoring humanity to healthcare.
These rebel healers are reshaping medicine.
These rebel healers
are you.
Oh my goodness. I cannot imagine the past several years without the FLCCC.
It's given me a sense of community because I've felt isolated from mainstream medicine.
What this means to me personally is that us doctors from those communities, we're not so alone anymore.
I have known in sending people to FLCCC that they would get honest information and that they would be working with people who uphold the fundamental ethic of medicine, and that is first do no harm.
Over time, I started to find a community of people I could trust, and the FLCCC was definitely a very big part of that.
The FLCCC was the place that I went back time and time again. They were the ones who had that knowledge that I could always rely on.
When I learned about the work of FLCCC, it was great that I did not feel so alone.
I want to see the FLCCC continue to be a force for medical freedom in this country and in the world.
I see FLCCC as the new template for medical education and medical learning.
That community grows so that next time this happens, because we know it's going to happen again, there will be something. And I think having that in place and having that community in place is going to be really important to keep people tied together.
Community is everything.
Community is everything.
If we can preserve a collaboration and the type of synergy that we have working with one another, that we'll be able to come up with some good treatment strategies for whatever the next crisis is.
We only change what needs changed if it's grassroots, if it's everybody joining in and doing it the FLCCC way.
This is the population of people that is creating a functional healthcare system, right? Parallel to basically the healthcare system that has failed us.
This is the battle to try to restore medicine to its original purpose.
The louder, the more powerful our voices are, the greater change we can bring about. Our clinics have been threatened to be shut down. Our licenses have been threatened to be taken away. I want to see that change. I want us doctors to feel safe practicing this medicine, because when we're safe to practice this medicine, people, the public, will be safe